Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We also have a moral responsibility to pass health insurance reform, and we will do so this year. It is a moral imperative. It is a health issue. It is an economic issue. I believe that we can do so best by increasing competition. And by increasing competition, we will, again, improve quality, lower costs.
Let's stop right there. She's lying at every turn. First of all, the left-wing gang called the Democrats began by calling it health care reform. About a month or so ago, they changed it to health insurance reform. That means the gang is trying to steal the insurance industry for their cronies. Number two, she says it's a moral, economic, and health imperative, and that will be achieved by increasing competition. Now, how can you increase competition by sticking the government into the business? It destroys competition. Nancy Pelosi is a bald-faced liar, but she's not alone. Listen now to Barbara Boxer.
Well, I really think we're going to see a total federal, having the federal government pick up most of the cost for at least 10 years. That's most of the talk that I've heard. And as we know, we don't have the bill from the Finance Committee. But I think it is too much of a burden right now. And this is a problem for us. We have to take care of it. And I think it's best to do it by the federal government coming in and not doing an unfunded mandate, but making sure that we pick up the lion's share of the cost. And then I think it will
Wait, what do you mean we? Who, you and your husband? What do you mean we pick up the lion's share? Liar, liar, pants on fire, Barbara Boxer. What do you mean you pick up, we pick up? You mean the people get screwed by you and your cronies? I am sick of this illegitimate government. I am sick of the gangsters. I am sick of the criminals in the Democrat Party. How about you? How do you feel about this? How much more can you take? Wait, you want to take some more? Here's what they just did. The House has new rules. You cannot use the word liar. You cannot use the word intellectually dishonest. You cannot use the word hypocrite in any discussion of the individuals in the Congress. What country are you living in that you can't call a liar, a hypocrite, and an intellectually dishonest person intellectually dishonest? Are you still living in the United States of America? I don't think so. The liberal Democrats are not liberal, and they're not Democrats. They're anything but liberal, and they're anything but Democrats. This has become a party of gangsters and cronies. And that is why Congress's ratings are at an all-time low. That is why Michael Savage is being attacked. That is why I, as the only independent in the top three, have been roundly skewered by the illegitimate phonies in the conservative movement, as well as the illegitimate liberals. The government media complex is at work, my friends. Make no mistake about it. It is the government media complex. And when I say government, I mean Republican and Democrat government. Make no mistake about it. They're two sides of the same coin. This is a government that is illegitimate. This is a government that could only be characterized as gangster-like. This is a government under Barack Obama that is like an Al Capone government. This is a government trying to steal one industry after another. First, they came for the banks. Then they came for the insurance industry. Then they came for the automotive industry. And now they're coming for the health industry. What's next? Your industry? Your house? Your car? Your business? Tell me what you think it is. This is the Savage Nation. That's what I think it is. Phone number, 1-800-449-8255. Clinton concerned about new weapons to Venezuela. She's so concerned that she's attacked a democracy called Honduras, trying to force that little nation to put a dictator back in power who was thrown out by term limits. I don't believe a word that this government says. Do you? Tom in New York, WOR, go ahead, please.
Michael Savage, it's always a pleasure. You're the grandmaster of conservatism. Michael, I think the government, they're going broke, and I think they're just trying to get another stream. I mean, why doesn't the left ever address the point that if they drive out competition, there will be no competition, and then it'll be another, every year it'll go up.
Because, Tom, the left doesn't want competition. The left wants a state-run economy. The state, the moral and economic and health imperative that Pelosi talks about is rubbish. The left wing is a Marxist or neo-Marxist administration right now. They believe only in a centralized state-controlled economy. They do not believe in the free market. They believe only in their own control of the marketplace for several different reasons. The number one reason is their own profits. Did you see the list yesterday of the 50 richest members of Congress, Tom? Did you hear about it on the show?
No, I didn't, Michael, but I can imagine.
95% of them are Democrats. How could it be that 95% of the richest members of Congress are the biggest crybabies about their moral and economic and health imperative for the poor? Because they're in it for the money. Don't you understand, Tom? That's how it works.
You got to get jobs at the winery, Michael.
What winery?
Who's got the winery, Pelosi or Feinstein?
Well, I don't know anything about which winery they have. Whatever wine they're selling, I'm not buying. I thank you for the call. Daniel, New York City, WOR. Go ahead. You hear it loud and clear on the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's a dictatorship. It is sickening. You speak the truth every time you speak. I listen to you every night. I drive a taxi 14 hours a day. The only thrill I get is hearing you because you're the only person that says the truth.
Well, the truth, as you well know, may set you free, but along the way, you may lose your freedom while you're setting yourself free. Right now, I'm living in very dangerous times. Right now, both the Republicans and the Democrats are out to get me, whether you know it or not, Daniel. Right now, unless you play ball with these two gangs, you wind up in very, very dangerous places. And they're not coming after people directly because they know they couldn't get away with it yet. Instead, they're using their friends in Britain, Daniel. That's what they're doing here. They're playing curveball here, Daniel.
I got to get your book, The Band in Britain, because I believe in truth. If it is going to cost me my life, so be it. But I am not going to subject myself to these dictators. I will fight every way I can, Michael. I am with you. I've listened to you for over a couple
of years. Well, I'm with you, and I understand that. Let me send you a free copy of Band in Britain, Daniel. Stay on the line. I'll give them out to every caller that gets on the line today. Band in Britain. We're going to press next week. If you want a copy, go to michaelsavage.com, 1-800-449-8255. Senate defunds ACORN, but seven senators stuck with them. You want to hear their names? The Senate voted overwhelmingly to strip the criminal organization ACORN of funding in the Transportation, Housing, and Urban Development Appropriations Bill. This is after ACORN workers were caught on tape in three cities allegedly abetting what they believed was a fraudulent mortgage and sex trafficking scheme. Seven senators were willing to stand by ACORN. Listen to the dishonor roll. You want to hear their names? Roland Burris, illegitimate Democrat from Illinois. Dick the Turban Durbin, illegitimate senator from Illinois. Bernie Sanders, communist from Vermont. Patrick Leakey Leahy, Democrat from Vermont. Bob Casey, Democrat, Pennsylvania. Kirsten Gillibrand, Democrat, New York, and Sheldon Whitehouse, Democrat, Rhode Island. That is the list of ill repute. Not voting was Senator Bob Mikulski and Senator Bob Byrd, Democrat, West Virginia. Ladies and gentlemen, this country is in very, very bad shape right now. Never before have we had as corrupt a federal government as we have now. We have had corrupt local governments. We still do. We have had and still have corrupt state governments, but never before in modern American history have we had an illegitimate federal government on this level. It is not only Chicago level, it is not only being run by a machine that is increasingly similar to the machine run by Al Capone, or if you want something more contemporary, Tony Soprano, but they are getting closer and closer to a Chavez-like dictatorship where they are changing the language itself. And I will tell you this as I sit here. I predict that within 1 to 2 years, talk radio shows like this will be made illegal in the United States of America, and then you will have nothing. You will have nothing but two puppets. Both puppets part of the same puppeteer. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We also have a moral responsibility to pass health insurance reform, and we will do so this year.
Let's stop right there. Notice how the illegitimate always use the word moral when they're trying to steal something from the taxpayer. The analogy here are the missionaries, the Christian missionaries, who went into the Hawaiian Islands a couple of hundred years ago and took the pagan Hawaiians, gave them the mumbo jumbo. And they said the statement is that the missionaries went to do good, and they did very well indeed. They gave the Hawaiian people the mumbo jumbo, and they stole their land from them. And today, the five families of the descendants of the missionaries still control a good portion of the private land of Hawaii. Same thing with the illegitimate of today. They tell you they're doing it for moral reasons, but it's always about dollars. Now, I want to show you on a local level what corruption is and what moral bankruptcy is. Here in the city of San Francisco, we have a mayor who I've affectionately called Any Twosome Newsome. The man is the most incompetent boob that has ever run San Francisco. In fact, he is so incompetent that he is sure he is competent enough, or rather incompetent enough, to become the governor. We had a murder here 2 years ago. An illegal immigrant, a gangbanger, killed a father and two sons, shot them in cold blood. This week, the anti-police district attorney, Kamala Harris, said that she's not going to seek the death penalty for this killer who killed an entire family. Today, the genius Mayor Newsom says it's not about politics, as he supports the choice to not seek the death penalty in the case of the illegal immigrant gangbanger charged in the slaying of a father and two sons. Now, I happened to run into two members of the Department of Homeland Security a few weeks ago in a bar in San Francisco, and they told me, and I'm not going to give you their names, obviously, that they were in the anti-gang task force. And it was they, not the SFPD, it was the DHS anti-gang task force that had the guts to infiltrate the MS-13 gang and to break this gang. They had been after this murderer for a year before he killed this father and two sons, but they were unable to touch this murderer because of Mayor Newsom and District Attorney Kamala Harris. Again, whether it's a local level, state level, or federal level, you can say that we have a government out of touch with the people's wants and needs. You could put it in a polite way like that if you wish. I would put it in another way. I'd call them gangsters and criminals out to destroy the country and steal as much as they can for themselves and their cronies. But then again, this kind of impolite talk is no longer acceptable in America in the new Obama years. In the new Obama years, you have to watch what you say real carefully, because the Capone gang is now running America. And the Capone gang doesn't like blunt talk unless it's them behind closed doors. What do you think? Do you think I'm off the beam here? Do you think that I'm being a little too condemning of the liberal Democrat Party? Albany, New York. Eric, welcome to the Savage Nation. Oh, I appreciate it. Dave in Sacramento, KSTE. Thank you for the call. What's on your mind, Dave?
Yeah, Michael, good afternoon. Good to talk to you. You know, these people are beginning to make me sick. There's something about them. I mean, we got them on the run, so, you know, the more we got them cornered, the nastier they seem to be getting.
Oh, wait a minute. Who's on the run?
The Democrats, these media types.
Well, Pelosi doesn't seem like she's on the run. She said she's going to pass health insurance reform. Have you noticed the change over the last month from health reform to health insurance reform? Now, why would the Sopranos want to take over the health insurance industry? Excuse me, I mean the Democrats. Why would the Soprano Party, I mean the Democrat Party, want to take over the health insurance business?
Well, they want to control everything you do in your life, of course.
Yeah, and how much money do you think they could make if they control the insurance industry?
It's quite a bit.
There's your answer. Follow the money. Thank you for the call. 1-800-449-8255. New York City, WOR. Loretta, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I am calling about the Washington mob, and that you're exactly right. That's who they are, and that's what I tell them. And Casey, when I call his office, I'm glad that you told me, you know, you have said he's for Acorn. No wonder his office gives me a hard time. He has a young man that answers the phone. When I talked about the czars, he said to me, what czars? Can you imagine?
Yes. Well, I can imagine. You know, there was a similar situation in New York City politics at the turn of the 20th century. It was called the Tammany Hall Gang. Are you at all familiar with that, Loretta?
Yes.
Vaguely. We all know what it is. Tammany Hall. It was run by Boss Tweed, I believe. In fact, Martin Scorsese did a movie called Gangs of New York a number of years ago that kind of dramatically portrayed this era when a gang ran New York. Does it look to you like we're living on with a federal situation similar to Boss Tweed or Tammany Hall running America?
Are absolutely right, and you're not off your beam. And I tell them, and this is the guy, he's telling me there's no czars, they're advisors, is what he said.
No, they're called czars. They were named czars by Obama because that's what his playbook calls for. Loretta, stay on the line. You get a free copy of Banned in Britain. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Any topic is not fair game. New York, we have a lot of New York callers. We're getting swamped. If you're in another part of the nation, we have to give you guys a little chance, too. Let's go to Chicago on the Savage Nation. Susan, you're up next. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. Can you understand how our representatives have pledged to uphold the Constitution, yet they are banning speech within their own house?
Yes.
I believe we also have a deputy attorney general who spent his career defending pornography.
Who is that? Who's this one?
David Ogden.
Oh, another one that they dug up from the cesspools of the porn houses and put him into the Justice Department. Are you surprised? Are you surprised by an attorney general who freed Puerto Rican terrorists that he would hire a pervert like this to be the assistant attorney general, rather someone who ran a front for pervert groups?
I'm not surprised.
All right, let's go back to the analogy. Boss Tweed, Tammany Hall. Do you think that analogy is unfair or fair, Susan? I know the answer. Stay on the line. Free copy of Banned in Britain to you.
Savage.
Well, all right. Well, we have to quote Lord Acton again. Power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts. Absolutely. The Nancy Pelosi House, the Obama presidency, is absolute power. They control the Senate. They control the Democratic Congress. They control the Democrat Senate. They control the presidency. That's called absolute power, and it has corrupted them absolutely. The only thing that stood between them and a total power grab, total takeover, were the town hall meetings, number one, and number two, what's been going on the Internet and on talk radio. In other words, the people. The very, very people that they thought they had bamboozled and lied, and corralled, rather, have suddenly come out of nowhere to say no more, we're not going to take it. And again, as I say to you, there's an analogy on a local level, New York City, Tammany Hall. You have to look that one up or watch Gangs of New York. You'll see what that was, where a boss ran the city. It was all about patronage and kickbacks. And then, of course, on the national level, I believe it was Taft. Was it Taft, Beowulf, who was the corrupt president? Was it him, the fat guy? Harding. Harding was the corrupt president. We've had an almost as corrupt administration in the past, but not in recent history as we have now with this gang from Chicago that's taken over the country. And the people understand. The people are not stupid. You had Obama come to power. Let's start with the war. Let's take an issue that the radical left made a centerpiece electing Obama. They rejected McCain and they erected Obama. Now, why did they erect Obama and reject McCain? Couple of reasons. The main one was that Obama ran on an anti-war platform. And yet you wake up and you find out that Obama is doubling the number of military personnel going to Afghanistan. I said about a month ago that there will be an active anti-war movement in this country, but surprisingly, I predicted it would not come from the left. It would come from the conservative side. And I believe that that is true. It's going to come from the returning military themselves and for the military families. Now, I know this is a very sensitive issue because most of the people in the radio business in particular who are the conservatives are gung-ho for war. They always have been. That's because they're too old to be drafted and they don't have any children who would ever be drafted. So it's safe for them to wrap themselves in a flag and to go out and do, you know, fundraisers for soldiers. Good luck to them. I have to take the risk of telling you what I think is so. I believe this war is lost already. And I believe that if we ramp it up, we're going to lose like the Soviets lost. Now, McCain and Bob Graham have come out and written an article, and they're urging Obama to employ, quote, decisive force to win the war in Afghanistan. In other words, they want a bombing campaign like we had in Vietnam. Do you remember when Johnson was told that the boys need some more air power, so bring out the B-52s? And the B-52s shellacked the NVA. The B-52s bombed the death out of the Ho Chi Minh Trail. The B-52s bombed Laos. They dropped bombs in Cambodia. And guess what? It had no effect on the movement of men and materiel down the Ho Chi Minh Trail. And I see the very same retrograde thinking in McCain, Lindsey Graham, and, of course, that weirdo Senator Lieberman of Connecticut. Now, they say that defeating the Taliban in Afghanistan remains a clear vital national interest of the United States. Do you believe that? I tell you that. Because by day, they may be in the Afghani military, but at night, they're probably in the Taliban. So when you try to separate the wheat from the chaff, or the terrorist from the ordinary Afghani, I don't think it's that easy to do, number one. I personally think that we're fighting most of Afghanistan right now. Most of the people probably are not sure what to do. They're afraid of the Taliban. On the other hand, many of them probably are more afraid of being bombed to death by an American missile or an American drone. And so I ask you, during the campaign, Obama pledged to make Afghanistan the central focus of U.S. military efforts to combat global terrorism. Do you actually believe that if we ran from Afghanistan or left Afghanistan, that we're going to have another 9/11 because they're going to be emboldened? Because that's the argument, okay? The three senators say that Mr. Obama was right when he said last year that you don't muddle through the Central Front on terror, you don't muddle through stamping out the Taliban. So that was Obama? He said that last year? I thought he ran on an anti-war campaign. Okay? So we've got two issues to discuss. Is the Obama administration analogy that I made to Tammany Hall an apt one? Or is it too harsh or too mild? Number two, do you think we should leave Afghanistan immediately and let the Taliban take over the country? Would it actually harm our national interest to do so? Those are two topics I like to talk about on the Savage Nation. Chicago, George, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
Michael, dead on Tammany Hall. You are exactly 100% accurate. Remember when Tammany was grabbing all the Irish coming off the boats, he then grabbed them for votes, just like what Obama does with Acorn. And also in the 5 points, if he wanted to get his across, he goes to the local gang leaders and says, you know what, I can't get nothing done, and it's getting... And let's hang four people affiliation. You are 100% accurate on Tammany Hall. It's exactly what he's doing. Exactly.
He's all right, George, you win a free copy of Banned in Britain. Stay on the line. 1-800-449-8255. South Carolina wants to talk about czars. We got a lot of callers on Acorn. We got Congress from New York. Sacramento, Leslie, welcome from KSTE. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage. I just see Obama running around like a used car salesman, and I just keep wondering to myself, who really is running our country? I mean, he's opening all these cans of worms and not really doing anything.
So you're saying he bit off more than he could chew? Is that more or less what you're saying?
Well, I would say so, but it's even more frightening than that because how many little minions does he have running around and how many of them are really pulling the strings?
Well, many of us believe that there's an invisible hand behind Obama. Many of us ask how an unknown senator could be taken from unknowing this, unknowing this. 2 years ago, no one ever heard of him. How could he be made president at a time like this? Where did the $1 trillion come from that elected Obama? Do you think that the individuals in America contributed that? Many people think the money was bundled from overseas sources. Some say Saudi Arabia, for example. Nobody really knows. And so you have to ask yourself, who is running the country? Well, let me say I certainly don't know, but I'll go back to the Bible. Did you listen to my show yesterday by any chance, Leslie?
Yes, I did, but I didn't get
to. Do you remember when I quoted that passage from the Bible where it says, you shall lend money unto all nations but borrow from none? Do you remember that one? Okay. The Bible says you shall lend money to all nations and borrow from none. And in so doing, you shall control the other nations and be answering to none. And take a look at our country today. Who owns the U.S. debt? China and Saudi Arabia. So I think we can pretty much answer the question through deductive reasoning that the invisible hands that are running America are not in Washington. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that.
Okay, stay on the line. Free copy of Band of Britain goes out to you. By the way, go to michaelsavage.com. We have a new cover. I finally put up the new one with graphic gothic lettering underneath the word. What's the word? I forgot already the new word in the title. It's up there. I can't even. Blacklisted, because the left doesn't believe that they can blacklist somebody. In fact, that's what the book is all about, fighting the blacklist, okay? Houston, Texas, Reigns, you're on the Savage Nation.
Good afternoon, Dr. Savage. Thank you for having me on your show.
If yes, sir.
President Obama did his undergraduate work studying Boss Tweed and Tammany Hall. He did his postgrad work studying the Honorable Richard J. Daley in Chicago. That's the big machine.
So you would say that it's closer to the Daley machine than the Tammany Hall machine?
Well, I would, in that the basis of the ether of the Tammany machine was enfranchise the destitute, encourage them to vote early and often, and
yeah.
Get yourself in power. The Daley machine said get yourself in power and basically privatize every aspect of your control by placing people in your pocket up to the governor's level to where you run an entire state, not just a city. And you control a Midwestern state, you control a swing region of the government, and therefore you can get a president in office.
Well, do you remember what happened the other day, and it's not been reported by ABC, CBS, NBC, that a key witness in the Blagojevich trial was found dead from an aspirin overdose. Did you see that story in passing, sir?
Yes, sir, I did. And I wonder from your pedigree if you could educate the public that it's very, very difficult to overdose from aspirin.
Yes, and isn't it very odd that a witness in the Blagojevich trial would suddenly die from an aspirin overdose?
Very strange. Does this sound like 1965, 1970 Chicago?
I don't know. It sounds like, why is there no FBI investigation of such a death?
Exactly. Why isn't the Attorney General's office getting involved? Because...
Wait, which Attorney General? You don't mean the one that Obama handpicked, do you?
Could it be that he possibly is taking a page from the Daily Manual and padding it with all of his cronies to make sure that things like that don't get looked at?
Don't know, Reigns, but I know that not everyone is as stupid as Professor Obama thinks they are. I don't think everyone is quite as stupid as Nancy Pelosi thinks they are. I certainly know that tens of millions of Americans know what's going on in this country, and they've had it up to here, and they're frightened. They're not going to these town hall meetings, and they're not sending these emails because they're happy. They're going because they're frightened by what they see. Rain, stay on the line. Free copy of Band of Britain goes out to you. We're going to press next week. Still time to check it out. Chicago. Kevin, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I listen to you all the time.
And well, I want to thank you for your patronage. Every listener means a lot to me, Kevin. What has you calling today?
Well, it is amazing the comment you just made. I actually tried to call on you like 3 or 4 times. I couldn't get on. I parked right in front of my house. You just said that the invisible hand behind Obama was Saudi Arabia. And you know, I wanted to get your opinion on, you know, yeah, it may be Saudi Arabia. I personally believe it's the banks, okay, that are controlling the economy. I think they are the ones who put him in power. You know, you got the Trilateral Commission, you got, you know.
When you say the banks, which banks do you mean? Because not all banks are equal. In fact, some banks are more equal than others to Obama, as you well understand. Some were bailed out. And some were not bailed out. Some were forced out, and some were enriched under Obama. So if you find out which banks were forced out and which banks were enriched, you'll find out a little bit more about who was at Martha's Vineyard this summer.
Well, Michael, it's the Federal Reserve Bank. They're accountable to nobody.
Well, let's talk about the New York Federal Reserve Bank. Did you read that Obama appointed a member of the AFL-CIO to the Federal Reserve Bank about a month ago? Did you catch that story?
I did not catch that story.
That's right, because your friends in the media wouldn't report it. But for the first time in history, a union member was put onto the board of the New York City Federal Reserve Bank. It went without notice. It was not discussed. And yet it is of major significance, especially when using the Tammany Hall analogy that I've been using today on the Savage Nation, Kevin. Stay in the line. Free copy of Band of Britain goes out to you. 1-800-449-8255. Cheryl in Mississippi, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
Hello there. I just wanted to, you've been saying follow the money. I tell my students that all the time, follow the money. What my question to you is, have you thought about following the money? Who will benefit the most from you being banned in Britain financially?
Yes. Yes. When they released the Lockerbie bomber, and we found out that Gordon Brown did it for a deal with Libya for oil, I pretty much saw the picture of who told Gordon Brown to put me on the list with murderers.
Yes.
It was the Arab oil money. Anybody who spoke about borders, language, and culture was a threat to them because they did not want any sovereignty in the West. The only sovereignty that is permitted is the racist sovereignty that is still found in Arab Gulf nations.
Absolutely. You follow the money, you'll get your answer.
Cheryl, you win a free copy of that great book, Banned in Britain. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Thus far in the Savage Nation, we have been talking about an analogy between the Obama administration under Obama, Pelosi, Boxer, etc., and Tammany Hall. Many of you don't know who Tammany Hall was, or rather what it was. It was visualized by Martin Scorsese and the gangs of New York. You can look it up and see what it was. It was basically a corrupt administration that lived only for itself and its cronies. And everything makes sense in that light in terms of a government that's not reactive to the people. The people do not want health insurance reform. The people did not want General Motors destroyed. The people did not want the banks bailed out. The people did not want TARP money. The people did not approve stimulus money, and yet they go ahead and do it. That is Tammany Hall. Under a new name, call it Obama Hall, whatever you want. Now, speaking of halls, there's the horrendous story of the slaying of the brilliant Yale University grad student, Annie Lee, who was found stuffed in a wall in a laboratory at Yale. It was astonishing. Well, they just released a report. A Yale lab technician is eyed in the slaying. And the name of the lab technician that is named, he is not guilty yet. The person of interest in the probe in the slaying is Yale lab tech Raymond Clark, age 24. Cops descended on the apartment building in which he lives with his girlfriend in Middletown, Connecticut, about 20 miles outside of the university, that's Yale, in New Haven. And earlier in the day, police officials said an arrest was not imminent in the case. But a state official later said authorities have a person of interest. A source close to Clark's family confirmed to the newspaper that he was the person who failed a polygraph test administered by authorities. And this character was also the one with scratches on his chest. Two key points that law enforcement sources have made about one person they are looking at. So, of course, he is innocent until proven guilty. However, by releasing his name, at least you have something to go on. This young girl was supposedly married the day after she was found slaughtered and stuffed in a wall. Her body was found in a chute filled with cables in the basement of the Yale building where she was conducting experiments in the lab. What a terrible waste of a life. You say that any death of this nature is horrendous, and it is. But, you know, when you see a young girl like this who spent a whole life developing her brain, sacrificing for learning, getting into graduate school, being, let us say, whatever she was, whatever level of brilliance she was, look at this, all over what? Lee was supposed to be married Sunday to a Columbia University grad student on Long Island. So they do have a candidate, a person of interest. He is a lab technician, age 24. His name is Raymond Clark. And his picture will be up momentarily on my website, michaelsavage.com. New York City, WOR. Nick, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. Boss Tweed's firm never died. Boss Tweed's firm, even up to the 80s, became Shea and Gould. Shea was actually part of the Boss Tweed group.
Hold on. You're saying Boss Tweed was a lawyer?
Oh, yeah, the law firm, yes, the major law firm. Shut down now, Bill Shea from Shea Stadium. That famous little name.
You're saying Boss Tweed was a lawyer? I didn't even know he was actually a lawyer?
No, the law firm. They had their own law firm later. Shea's father was part of it.
Oh, so when you say Shea, you mean like Shea Stadium, S-H-E-A. I'm sorry, I couldn't get the pronunciation. I thought you were giving me the French pronunciation, C-H-E-S, sorry.
No. So what they did, they just had their law firm there. And in that same law firm, you had all the unions. The unions made their office there. For example, the restaurant union. What they do and what they did is control New York politics and the Democratic Party. As Boss Tweed would say, I don't care who gets in office as long as our candidate. So they would own both the Democrat and the Republican candidates. And
yeah, does that sound like today? Does it really matter for 90% of the Republicans whether they're Democrat or Republican?
Here's the way it works. It works I tried to get on your show once before. Well, I don't want to give my full name out, but I was a managing director of one of those major law brokerage firms. We owned every Democrat and every Republican. Each partner in those law firms, they lose their mind, I hope they don't recognize my voice, would have to give so much of their percentage every month, every pay.
Oh, my God. A direct kickback had to be given to the firm?
No. I didn't say direct kickback. It goes into the PAC. And the pack goes, and you go to every meeting, and you go to every...
Wow. Hey, look, Nick, could you call back at the top of the next hour? And just get a handkerchief and put it over the telephone. I got to hear more about this. See, I don't remember this guy. Wow, what a listener.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
About Nancy Pelosi in a House committee meeting continuing to push for health insurance reform. She says it is a moral, economic, and health imperative. Please play a bit of clip 8 so that people can catch up if they've come in late to the Savage Nation classroom. Let's hear the rest of that, please. Clip 8 when you are ready.
We also have a moral responsibility to pass health insurance reform, and we will do so this year. It is a moral imperative. It's a health issue. It is an economic issue. I believe that we can do so best by increasing competition. And by increasing competition, we will, again,
well, let's stop right there. Everything she says is a lie. First of all, they started with health and health reform. Then they went to health insurance reform. So the Boss Tweed gang now wants to take over the health insurance industry. Let's start with that theory. They claim that it will increase competition for the government to set up a government insurance program. Can you explain to me how a government-controlled business which doesn't have the same, let's say, latitudes and longitudes of a privately controlled business, how that would increase competition. Let's go back a bit for those of you who don't understand it. Because on the surface, you could fall for this lie. You could say, well, wait a minute, what's wrong with cutting back on the profits of insurance companies? We all know that they're greedy and they're no good. And I've had my experience with insurance companies over the years. I have fought with HMOs and I've had a fight with insurers to make payments. So I understand where you're coming from. And I understand that there's a lot of fat in that system. But let's say we have a health insurer called the United States government. How does that increase competition? I would say the opposite is true. They will destroy private insurers. It will become only a government-controlled insurance system along the lines of an FDIC, right? FDIC. So it's the same kind of deal they want to set up. And the only people who will benefit will be the people who write the bonds for these things, again, going back to the bankers and Wall Street. You have to understand, if it's not outright boss-tweed corruption with, you know, the insurance itself and scams along those lines, so it's whoever's going to be given the contracts to write the insurance will wind up getting the profits, okay? Now, in the last hour in the Savage Nation, we had a caller who understood my analogy of Tammany Hall and how aptly it applies to the Obama administration. Nick rejoins us now from WOR. Nick, welcome to the program. Nick, you say you worked for a brokerage firm. I'm not going to ask you for the details, just so people know where you're coming from.
Let's put it this way. I was an insider.
All right, you're an insider. So you were an insider. So do you agree that the Tammany Hall analogy is apt?
The Tammany Hall analogy exists, and it exists today. Because what you have to understand, okay, every city and every state sells municipal bonds, don't they?
Yes.
Now, who runs the state governments in most cases is the Democratic Party.
Yes. The
Democratic Party is always tied in with the unions. You know that, too. So
yes.
What you have at the brokerage firms and the Democratic Party and the unions in bed with each other. And how it works is, how do I put it?
Go ahead. Look, Nick, you don't have to divulge any more than you feel is necessary to make your point. I don't want you to get in trouble here. So just tell us the outline.
With the commission, do you want to do hundreds of millions of dollars worth of bond deals? Do you want those finder fees? Well, you will support us. So what you do in the brokerage business is you support both sides, and you own literally both sides. I'm quite an old man now, but I can go back to President Johnson. He said the wrong thing at a speech.
And what did he say?
And he says, well, how did you like the speech to the CEO of this particular corporation?
Yeah.
And he said, you tell the bleep, expletive, A-H, that's not what he was supposed to say, and if he does it again, he'll never get in office again. And, of course, President Johnson did not go for re-election.
Wait, who said that to him?
Own it. They own everything.
No, but you're not making it clear. Who said that? Who was it who made that statement about Johnson? I didn't follow that.
I can't give you his name because then they'll know exactly who I am because I said
nothing. No. So you're saying it's someone in the brokerage business or the banking business?
The bank. Bankers and brokers. The Goldman,
okay.
The Bears, the Lehman.
All right. The Goldman Sachs gang. So let's go now to health insurance reform, Nick. Why did the Obama Tammany Hall machine switch from health reform to health insurance reform approximately 6 weeks ago? Why are they targeting the insurance industry, in your opinion?
In my opinion? They're in bed with them already. Why do you think there's no crossing the state line? Why do you think if you cross the state line to buy insurance, there would be a competitive market. There's no competitive
yes.
market this way. So everyone takes care of who they want to. And they have a locked, but they have a captured audience, which is called.
Yeah.
So it's everything.
But so you're saying that state insurance commissioners make certain that people don't buy insurance out of state. Is that what you're saying they're in business for?
They won't allow it.
They won't allow it. They won't allow a national insurance company to come along. Is that it?
What they have to do is just open up insurance across the state lines for anything. The competitiveness will automatically drop health costs all the way down. Look at it.
All right, wait, hold on. So then you agree with Nancy Pelosi that we need a health insurance reform bill. Is that true?
No. What we need is deregulation of the insurance companies not having locked market, captured audiences in each state.
All right, I follow you. So now I'm following you, but I'm trying to have the audience follow you. Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats want health insurance reform. by which they mean a government health insurer. Is that correct?
They're backdooring. They're backdooring to get in government health insurance. And they want government control because of the economy. Once you have the unions, does anybody shoot Santa Claus? You will never get the Democrats out of office. If they're able to attain this health care, the bureaucracy that will be built will be so large that automatically the Democrat Party will they have the unions. They will own the votes. Who's gonna vote them out of office and lose their job because you want to do away with an unconstitutional bureaucracy? Because
so in other words, we'll have a dictatorship even worse than we already have it.
Wait, what makes you think you don't have it now? Well, what makes you think right now?
Wait, you didn't hear what I said. I said we'll have a dictatorship even worse than we have now.
Oh, absolutely. I
don't believe we have a two-party system at all. How many years have I been in radio since 1994? What was the first thing I said the first month? We have a two-party system that fundamentally is a Democrat or Republican party. I never went for the fact that we have real competition in the political arena. I'd love real competition in the political arena. They talk about real competition in the insurance arena. How about real competition with a third party, Nick?
But there is a third party because I'm writing a book on it. There should be a third party, but not a third party. You're never going to get it, Michael. You gave me the idea, I guess it's about a year ago, when you said, I'm thinking about starting a party. I'm thinking about starting a party. No, Michael, you don't want to start a party. I gave your caller my phone number. What you want is a constitutional party that represents constitutional Democrats and constitutional Republicans that will follow a limited government as according to the Constitution. That way they can keep that damn title of Democrat, Republican, they're the same. But if they make an oath or a vow towards with a constitutional Democrat, constitutional Republican, don't run against each other. Join together, and then you could beat them. You will never beat
Nick,
them.
So let's go back to Tammany Hall, the most corrupt government in New York history. Did Tammany Hall get taken down eventually or not?
Excuse me?
Did Tammany Hall get taken down eventually or not?
No, they changed their name. There was a law firm called Tweed, it might have been Faye, I don't remember the last name.
Yeah.
It's going back, I'm back. But it went from that firm to Shea and Gould. The biggest part of Shea and Gould was whatever you want to win, whatever you want, we'll give it to you if we have the case. First of all, you'll never get a top lawyer. You could never get a top lawyer because, first of all, let's say the brokerage firm, for example. Every top law firm is on retainer. So you have a conflict of interest. You can't take a case against them.
Mm.
You can't.
Yeah, I saw that in The Sopranos when she goes for advice from a divorce attorney. He says to her, I'm sorry, I can't represent you because your husband came and saw me, and he had come and seen every major divorce attorney for 10 minutes before that, a couple of months, weeks before that, just so that she couldn't use him. It's along those lines, right?
You know how they pay off? Clean. You know what? You want to talk about laundries. The mafia has nothing on them. Nothing whatsoever. I'll tell you how they could pay off. Let's say you have a governor, and he has a son that's an attorney. So the son automatically gets to a beautiful, big law firm, famous.
Mm.
Now, they can't pay the governor, could they? That wouldn't be proper to give him money because then, hey, you take a bribery, special interest. But you could say, I got to retain these law firms for big cases. So you retain the law firm and you say, well, I'm happy that you have such as. Why don't you credit this particular partner or this particular young man? I feel he's a good attorney.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, he's on retainer for $500,000, isn't he?
Well, but you see, Nick, I understand all of this. I know about one hand washes the other. I know about the patronage system. I grew up understanding all of this. When I was a kid in New York, I saw the assemblyman with the plaques on the back of the car, and I said, what's that about? All of them were little petty bureaucrats. I understood all of that. And I understood that patronage operated in New York and every other city in America. But I'm talking now about the Obama administration and the magnitude of the patronage system and the magnitude of the corruption and the magnitude of the arrogance that we all see. Wouldn't you agree with me that he's ramped up the arrogance magnitude maybe by 100-fold over what Bush was doing?
Of course. All they need is one more Supreme Court judge. They got lock, stock, and barrel. They have it lock, stock, and barrel. All they need is one more. Though they could impeach them if everybody looks at federal law. There's misdemeanors, high misdemeanors. It's impeachable. They won't go to jail, for not following the Constitution. But they kept.
Well, right. As I said once, although I was not a fan of Bush, I said his greatest legacy may be the two people he put on the Supreme Court. And I still mean that. These are moderate centrists, but it's always given us the 5-4 margin, including on the Second Amendment, all because of Bush. But if, God forbid, that should shift in the next few years, the whole world changes, as you say, Nick. I agree with you on that.
Last decision, but a funny thing is, the last decision that came down in California, which is the most liberal court in the nation, went for to protect the Second Amendment, and not protect it for any other reason but to protect it, to protect the people against government, which was a shocking decision. With
No, that decision was by the U.S. Supreme Court. It was the first time the Second Amendment had ever been heard by the Supreme Court, and they heard in favor of the individual right to bear arms, Nick. It was the U.S. federal government. No, it's interesting that you bring up the California Supreme Court, because they just had a ruling a few months ago about gay marriage, and in fact, they came out against gay marriage, which was a shocker in the state of California, Nick. I never expected that one.
Society, to control society, the first thing you have to do is create a democracy. Once you create a democracy, you have your mobocracy. You got mob rule. It's like a lynch. There's no protection. There's no Republican. There's no law. That's what the Democratic Party has right now. No law. You could go to New York, for example, or you could go to New Jersey. Every judge is handpicked, and they cross the lines because they're picked. They can't. No one gets in trouble. A judge could get nailed.
All right, so hold on. Okay, I'm listening to you like you're like a friend of mine, a relative. Okay, we're talking real talk. Okay, let's go back to Governor Spitzer with the hooker thing. Do you agree with me that the bankers brought him down because he was about to crack down on the corruption?
What the heck is going to get laid have to do with this man tearing down these people for their corruption? He was wise to it. I feel sorry for Spitzer, but here's the thing about Spitzer.
No, let's stick to this for a minute, then take a break. I got to come back. Spitzer was dallying around with prostitutes, correct? Don't you agree with me that his political enemies knew this for a long period of time, and they held this over his head, and they only went after him just when he was about to come down, crack down on Wall Street?
He was coming down on Wall Street. He was coming down on Bernie Madoff. He was coming down on all of them. He was building a book, which they call
it. Yes. So why was this governor so naive as to use ladies of the night via credit card in an offshore account? How naive can you get? This is the man who's supposed to be the watchdog of Wall Street. He couldn't even figure out that they were watching him. Stay in the line. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The country is incendiary right now because they smell a rat. The people are not as stupid as Pelosi and company think they are. They try to pull a fast one. They slipped the imposter into office. And then the imposter overreached. And now the imposter and his gang are trying to push in a health insurance reform bill. And the people heard, first it was health reform, now it's health insurance reform. And they smell a rat because they're saying, wait a minute, what do you mean you're going after the insurance companies with a government insurance company? What is that going to do for me? So let's go back to Nick for a summary. Nick, go ahead, please. You got the last word.
The only thing I could tell you, you asked me about Spitzer, and I'm going to say very clearly, power is an aphrodisiac. That power went to his head, and he thought he was infallible. But they always have a dossier on everybody, Michael.
And right, but Spitzer was using prostitutes. But instead of paying cash, the guy was using a credit card paid to an offshore account. Doesn't that show a lack of intelligence on the part of the man who was supposedly the watchdog of Wall Street?
Arrogance, Michael. And besides which, people...
All right, pride cometh before a fall, in essence. The Bible passage applies in this case, Nick, correct? Pride cometh before a fall. Nick, I want to thank you for a very enlightening visit to the Savage Nation. I want to send you a free copy of Banned in Britain, The Fight Against the Liberal Blacklist. Thank you very, very much for your insights. All I can suggest is that you do not go running in Marcy Park. 1-800-449-8255. michaelsavage.com. We are talking about weird but true crimes in the United States of America at the lowest and highest level. When you say a thing like that, it sounds funny. But it's as though we're living through Tammany Hall and Boss Tweed all over again, all gussied up, new makeup, but it's the same story all over again. It's naked corruption, period. What else can I say?
Savage.
So the dying media does not tell you about the million protesters in Washington, D.C. over the weekend, but foreign newspapers did. The dying media calls it thousands of downtown protesters. It's astounding to me how out of touch with reality they are, but we've been talking about that for so long. I mean, why mention it? So let's talk about something now kind of stupid. Showerheads may harbor bacteria dangerous to some. Just came out. What did I just say? Well, that's right. A study shows that showerheads may harbor tiny bacteria that come spraying into your face when you wash. People with normal immune systems have little to fear. But these microbes could be a concern for people with AIDS, people with cystic fibrosis, or people undergoing cancer treatment because your immune system is being diminished owing to the drugs you're taking, or if you've had a recent organ transplant. You see, researchers at the University of Colorado tested 45 showers in 5 states. And what did they find? Well, not that it's dangerous to take showers, but they said that the shower heads are full of nooks and crannies. They're hard to clean, and the microbes live in there. And so they say there are some things you can do. Well, number one, get all metal shower heads, which microbes have a harder time clinging to. Others say get a filtered shower head and replace the filter weekly. And baths, don't splash microbes into the air as much as showers, which blast them into easily inhaled aerosol form. Okay, so it's a Hitchcockian thing. It's bugs in your shower head. And the bug in question has a name, Mycobacterium avium, which have been linked to lung disease in some people. Okay, another fear. What are the symptoms of showerhead disease now? Tiredness. Okay, everyone has that. A persistent dry cough. That's endemic. Shortness of breath. Everyone over 40. Weakness. That's anyone listening to Obama. And generally feeling bad. That's every Republican in America. Showerheads were sampled at houses, apartment buildings, and public places in New York, Illinois, blah, 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 blah. The researchers sampled water flowing from the showerheads, then removed them, swabbed the interiors of the devices, and separately sampled water flowing from the pipes without the shower heads. So what are you supposed to do about it? Well, since the bacteria tends to build up in the shower head much more than in the incoming water coming in, I guess you got to change your shower head. And I'm in favor of a government shower head commission. I'm right now calling for Obama to declare war on privately funded shower head manufacturers and to create a government showerhead manufacturing consortium run by Barney Frank, who knows an awful lot about water and showers. And I think that if we have a government showerhead manufacturing facility built somewhere, perhaps in China, people can then take their showers a little more safely. Of course, there's other things you can do other than waiting for Obama to build a showerhead facility for you with safe government-controlled showerheads. One of which I would think is pretty commonsensical, other than taking the shower head off and dipping it in bleach and then rinsing it again. You're not going to do that too often. How about just running the shower under heavy force for a few minutes? Wouldn't that tend to blow the most of the bacteria out of the head? You know, when you think about it, look at those water filters in your sinks that are on the taps. I have one. You know, I think it's a Moen filter that's right on the edge of my sink. I know from common sense you're supposed to run that for 30 seconds before you drink the water. So what I do is I run it for 30 seconds to a minute. Then I shift it where you press the button and it goes to filter. I run that for 30 seconds to a minute. That's going to blow out some of the bacteria. I mean, other than that, what do you do? You're like David the Bubble Boy. I mean, how much can you worry about? You can't worry about everything in the world. You can just reduce, you know, diminish some of these things. So short of showering in vodka, I would suggest that you just turn the water on for a couple of minutes before you get in it and let it go at that and get a metal one. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com, Virginia Beach. Mary, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael Savage, I think you are the best. I absolutely love your show. I love you. I want to let
you know that's so nice.
I gave a small donation for the freedom of speech, and I just want you to keep up the good fight.
Well, let me say thank you. Every listener matters to me on this show. Every person who listens to this show is an important person in my life, number one, and I think a very important person in the building movements around the country to take the country back from the corrupt and broken two-party system.
Love you, and again, keep up the good fight. We need you.
Now, Mary, what did you really call about other than to say you like me?
During the break, I heard about the recession's over, okay? And they talked about unemployment being the news about being 9.5%. But don't worry, the recession is over. Although the unemployment's still going to go up, don't worry, the recession's over.
Who said the recession's over? Who gave that speech?
It was the news on Virginia Beach 790.
Well, that's because Obama the Magnificent said that the other day. He saved America from disaster by pumping $1 trillion of stimulus money into the economy. Don't you remember the president said that, so therefore it must be true?
I do, but it's so frustrating. Unemployment continues to go up. How stupid do they think we are? The recession's not over.
Well, of course it isn't, but Obama wants you to think it's over, and so therefore the people in your local newspaper have gotten their talking points, and they're printing what they're supposed to print. Mary, because you're such a fond fan of the Savage Nation, I'm going to send you a new copy of the Banned in Britain book, which will be out shortly. Please stay on the line, 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. If you want to talk about acorns, shower heads, whatever. Now let's go to what happened in New York, where the New York Police Department blew a raid on an Al-Qaeda cell. The FBI was very, very upset because the NYPD blew the surveillance. The NYPD screwed it up completely, according to what I'm reading. The FBI was watching this character who trained with Al-Qaeda, came back to Denver. They were about to bust him in New York, but instead the NYPD went out into the neighborhood and started to put out flyers on this Afghani. It wound up in the hands of an imam. Hello, imam? Imam. An imam in a mosque, M-O-S-Q-U-E. The imam in the mosque alerted the Afghani that he was under surveillance, and the raid was blown. Thank you, NYPD. Thank you for following the rules of political correctness instead of following correct surveillance techniques. The FBI is rightly concerned with the leakage from the NYPD. But look, it's not limited to the NYPD. This political correctness insanity is going to kill us all if we're not willing to face what's really going on. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. What would you like to talk about? How about, well, the liar thing is over. We have the Acorn spokesmouth, a boychick named Scott Levinson from Acorn, calling the undercover operation where they busted the hooker pimp thing a sham. Listen to clip 12.
It's a sham is what it is. It's an orchestrated sham. It's journalism by Borak.
Let's stop for a minute. I thought the sham guy died from a heart attack a couple of months ago. Is he trying to sell shams? This is a spokesmouth, Scott Levinson, for Acorn. You know what went on with Acorn, with the hooker and the pimp and them getting busted. So they have a spokesmouth named Scott Levinson. I don't know whether he's selling chamois or he's calling it a sham. Let's hear it again.
It's a sham is what it is. It's an orchestrated sham. It's journalism by Borak. That they're attempting to create news rather than report the news and are doing so in a deceiving, not genuine way and trying to trick people who are trying to help people.
In other words, it's called entrapment. So in other words, if you go out and you try to buy drugs from somebody as a cop, that's entrapment. But meanwhile, you're going to catch a drug dealer, aren't you? You schmuck. And if you go out and you say to them, here's a girl 14 years old, can you help us become a hooker here? And she helps you do it. That's called entrapment to one person, but it's called catching a thief to another, you schmuck, you. Listen to the next clip, 13.
We've been demanding the raw footage, the unedited tape, the undoctored tape, to really try and figure out what was really going on.
Yeah, you can figure it out. I can tell right off the bat that you can figure it out pretty good. The raw sewage that you're looking for will condemn the dolls and Acorn even more, Scott boy. I suggest you start looking for a job, okay? 1-800-449-8255. New York City, WR. Larry, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, it's an honor. I find it horrible the way Hillary describes how she...
New York, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, hi, Doc. I want to know why the government locks up Jerry Kuzman for not paying his taxes, and Charlie Rangel gets a free pass on every crooked thing he's done.
Because he's Charlie Rangel. He's a Democrat. He controls the tax writing committee. Therefore, he can do whatever he wants.
Well, we got to do something. We got to take this country back.
Oh, sure. Take the country back. Go to your Republican representative and see what they'll do for you.
I know.
We don't have a two-party system, Matt. Isn't it obvious that there's one party with two different names, two heads of the same coin? Isn't it obvious that they are Republicrats, that they are Democrats? When you got Charlie Rangel, one case after another of corruption, not paying taxes, he writes the taxes on the House Ways and Means Committee, and he gets away with it because his friends won't prosecute him. What else are they getting away with? Well, the answer is just about anything you can imagine and more. And the model is Tammany Hall. Isn't that correct, Matt?
Listen, I'm a retired cop, and I'm sick of it up to my ears, and it's just unbelievable.
You're a retired cop. I could just imagine your agit every day. I can just imagine what you go through. Okay, Matt, stay in the line. I'm going to make your day a better day. I'm sending you a free copy of Banned in Britain. 1-800-449-8255. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The one and only Savage Nation, still going strong from coast to coast on 370-some-odd stations. The phone number's always been the same, 1-800-449-8255. We have a very, very sad and pathetic story of corruption and political correctness here in San Francisco. As you may recall, a couple of years ago, a gangbanger, an MS-13 member, killed a father and two sons. If you remember, I contributed money to the surviving mother. Well, the DA, who was an anti-police district attorney, Kamala Harris, said she would not pursue the death penalty against the murderer. Now the mayor, the lunatic mayor, Eni Tusum Newsom, who thinks he's so smart and so pretty that he could be anything, including president, the lunatic mayor, Newsom, comes out and says he backs the DA's decision not to seek the death penalty in the case of the illegal alien charged in a triple homicide. Now, you ask yourself if in your time, your father's time even, a mayor could survive one day in office if he took such a position. And yet in San Francisco, a once proud city that is now, I don't know how to put it, it's a beautiful city. I love the city. I live in the city. I love some of the restaurants in the city. How in the world can the people of this city tolerate such a duplicitous man as Gavin Newsom? Here's a man who slept with his advisor's wife. This man wants to be governor. Here is a man who says he backs the DA's not bringing the death penalty against the illegal alien charged in a triple homicide. Here is a man who has come out and said, no matter what you think, it's too late. We're going to force gay marriage down your throats. How in the world can this man think that anyone's going to elect him as the governor of the late great state of California? So you say Tammany Hall and Obama. Yes, you're right. You say Chicago-style politics and Obama. Yes, you're right. But take a look at a beautiful city such as this. The corruption and the disconnect from reality of this mayor is the same as it is with Obama on a national level, and yet the people do nothing. They go along as though nothing can be done. They go along as though nothing will ever change. Well, I beg to disagree with you. It's because of leaders like Obama and leaders like Newsom that change occurs in the country. When this level of corruption becomes so endemic, eventually honest candidates will appear and the people will rally behind them. Unfortunately, right now, we don't have a two-party system. In California, it has been a one-party system for a very long period of time. Feinstein plays the centrist Democrat to Boxer's liberal Democrat, but they're basically both fundamentally exactly the same, and yet there's not a Republican running for the Senate who could defeat them. I could defeat either of them if I ran. Now you say, well, why don't you do it? Because I am never going to run for office. I never wanted to be a politician. I never will be a politician. And I know never is a long time, but I made that commitment a long time ago. I am positive that an honest man like Michael Savage could run for the Senate and defeat either one of them. I'm positive. And I know I could do it with very little money. But I won't do it. I want nothing to do with the system. I have a radio show that is under attack. I have a publishing company called Savage Productions, Inc., that is under attack. I have a website called michaelsavage.com that is under attack. So I have my hands full. I'll do what I have to do to survive as I am. So let's go back to the callers now on the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. Let us go to Spokane, Washington. Joe, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
What an honor, Mr. Savage. Thank you for your voice.
Well, you know, I don't say I'm offended by the honor thing, but I'm not one of those thin-skin guys who need you to say it's an honor. I got to tell you this. Without you, I wouldn't have a show, so it's my honor. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you, sir. I am very involved in the 912 Project. In fact, spoke here last Saturday, but I want to talk about what you were talking about earlier about Saudi Arabia. I have family firsthand credibility to put that you are absolutely right, Doctor. Saudi Arabia is the puppet master. Obama is the puppet and all his goons around him.
Well, I don't know that that's true. I can only suspect because of a few things. Number one, he isn't the first president owned by the Saudis. Wouldn't you agree with that?
I would agree with that, yes.
All right. Remember that it was George Bush who was led around by his pinky by the king. You remember that picture?
I sure do.
All right. Then we had Obama taking bling around his neck like he was a rap star getting an award. That was number two. But I was talking about being banned in Britain, and why did the British government pick on Michael Savage, a man who speaks for borders, language, and culture? Who would have triggered this? I said it had to be the Saudis.
I agree. I agree. I believe the Saudis are pulling the strings all over this world. My little sister lived there for 7 years with her American husband back in the 80s. My brother-in-law was imprisoned there. We had to get my sister and my nephew out of there through Beirut, and we were able to get her out of there, and there's lots of Americans that are still imprisoned over there.
Right, it is a corrupt, despotic, racist, anti-feminist regime. There's nothing nice to be said about it. It is a despotic throwback regime running the world right now, and they probably own some of the Congress. I'm not so sure they own the presidency. I think there are other elements at play. Simply on the greed level, I would say it's a certain money changer would be my guess as the real player here, the man who's been running the dollar down because he bet against it. But let's put that aside because we can only speculate at this point, Joe. What are we going to do about it? The Bible says you shall lend unto all nations and borrow from none, and in so doing you shall basically control those nations. Can you blame the Saudis for following the Bible and their own Quran, which was based in great part upon the Bible? They're following their own teachings, which say you shall lend to many and borrow from none. And in so doing, you shall control them. And so they're only doing what their own Bible tells them to do. What's wrong with that, Joe?
Well, I understand what you're saying. And I also would have to say to that, that we're all children of God. We have the wicked and we have the good. And in my way of, I've never claimed to be book smart, but I have a heck of a lot of common sense that kept me alive in combat.
Well, what I'm saying is you allege that it's the Saudis who are pulling the ban in Britain, the Saudis who put Obama in office, and I'm saying they're only following their own Bible. The Bible says, lend unto all nations, and you shall control them, borrow from none. We are now a begging nation. We're a nation of beggars because of various reasons. You can't just say Democrat. You have to say the whole system was basically overblown, and we all borrowed from them, if you want to put it to you that way. And so now we're owned by the people we borrowed from. As they say, there's a golden rule. He who has the gold basically sets the rules. So Saudi Arabia has the gold, and they're setting the rules. So they have puppets in office. What's new about that, Joe?
No, that's what I was leading to, is that when my brother-in-law came back and we got him out of the system over there, I asked this individual. He is.
All right, we only have 30 seconds, Joe. I have to go. I'm sorry. You made your point. I appreciate it. We just ran out of a little time here. Claudia, San Francisco, 650 on the dial. Go ahead. You have the last word.
Hey, Michael. Love you.
Thank you.
I just want to let you know that my maiden name is Thornhill and that my father was from England, and he would turn over in his grave if he knew what they were doing to you. So I decided to email Parliament and tell them what I thought of them.
Good for you. God bless you. I'm sending you a free copy of Banned in Britain. That'll be the last word in this hour. Thanks for all the listeners. I'll be right back.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, as you well know, our disgraced Congress at the lowest rating in its history because they're all pork barrel spenders has now put out guidelines on how to put down each other or how to put each other down in a debate. As you know, you can't call anyone a liar. Here are the proper insults on the executive branch in the Chamber of Horrors. You can say disgrace and nitwit. You cannot use the word liar or sexual misconduct. I guess that's because both lying and sexual misconduct are so prevalent. Under Section 370 of the House Rules and Manual, it has been held that a member could refer to the government as, quote, something hated, something oppressive. You can refer to the president as, quote, using legislative or judicial pork. You can refer to a presidential message as, quote, a disgrace to the country. You can refer to unnamed officials as, quote, our half-baked nitwits handling foreign affairs. However, they have decided that a member cannot, one, call the president a liar, because all of them are. You cannot call the president a hypocrite, because by definition, they're a hypocrite. You cannot describe the president's veto of a bill as cowardly. You cannot charge that the president has been intellectually dishonest, because they always are. And you cannot refer to the president as, quote, giving aid and comfort to the enemy, because when they are, well, I guess they aren't. You also cannot refer to alleged, quote, sexual misconduct on the president's part. And that doesn't refer to his private parts. This is unbelievable to me that they're now passing rules on what you can say about our wonderful and esteemed leadership, Beowulf.
It sounds like something that comes out of 1984, like the Fairness Doctrine has been imposed on the Congress itself.
Yeah. Well, we're also talking today about Pat Buchanan. As you know, for years, people told me to disengage from him years ago, and I only did so 2 years ago. When he defended Hitler, when he said that Hitler never wanted to invade America, I never had him on the Savage Nation again. Well, it turns out that he went to a debate in England. Patrick Buchanan was one of three individuals who argued for the proposition that Winston Churchill was more of a liability than an asset to the free world. Can you believe this? Now, according to press accounts, of the 1,800 people who attended, only 181 joined Buchanan in supporting that attack on Churchill. The fact of the matter is, Pat Buchanan backed up Vladimir Putin's idea that somehow the Brits were responsible for World War II. Pat Buchanan's arguments during the debate were astonishing. Nobody understood whether he was sympathizing with Hitler or just being anti-Churchill. A professor, Overy, who has published extensively on the history of World War II, added this. I thought what Pat Buchanan said was a load of historical nonsense. That was all completely out of context, and I know it is. Because I have in my hands excerpts from Hitler's speeches on Churchill, and some of the statements that Hitler made about Churchill are strangely familiar to what Buchanan said during the debate against Churchill. So, in long and short, Beowulf, I'm ashamed to tell you that Pat Buchanan, who led the cultural wars argument back in the 90s, is not really a conservative. This is not conservative philosophy backing Hitler. When I started in radio, I declared I was a conservative and that there was a strong firewall between myself and the fascist far right. I am afraid that Pat Buchanan is not a conservative. He belongs on the extreme fringes of the right wing. And what's interesting to me is that he's only permitted on one network, and that's MSNBC, where the fascist left has a very regular home.
it's really sad. I mean, he says that, you know, they were wrong to bomb Dresden, and the Blitz was just a reaction to other things that Churchill had done. So he's completely defending Hitler.
Yeah. Well, they always talk about Dresden, but the fact is, what about the firebombing of London, which preceded the firebombing of Dresden, incidentally?
Right.
And what about the firebombing of the main port in Holland by Hitler? Rotterdam, which he burnt to the ground. How come that's never mentioned?
No, well, he certainly didn't mention it. It's just frightening. It's like out of, you know, we're listening to a speech at the Reichstag instead of a debate.
What do you think is going on? Do you think Pat Buchanan, as he's gotten older now, he's entering senility where his sense of... No, I'm serious about that. I believe he's entering a stage, in my opinion, of early senility where he doesn't even recognize anymore what in the heck he's actually saying. I think this is the real Pat Buchanan coming out. I think this is the schoolyard bully, the man who sympathized with Nazism and Hitler, really showing its face. You know, I had a professor when I was working for my doctorate at the University of California who said that the first thing older people lose is their judgment. He said they don't even know they're losing their judgment. And in this case, I think he's right. I don't think Buchanan understands what he's doing here. Now, talking about insanity, here you have Venezuela and Russia unifying. Here you have Hillary Clinton doing nothing about it. Instead, Hillary Clinton is attacking the democracy not too far away in South America, in Honduras, where the people threw out a dictator, and Hillary Clinton wants the communist dictator reinstated, Beowulf.
It's sad. You know, people sell out for oil money, and I think that's what it amounts to.
Did you see the videotape of the white student being beaten on a school bus by blacks and the crowd cheering?
Oh, yeah. It was horrible. The guy even had glasses on, and he was still beating him up.
Yeah. Well, I guess this was what Obama means by bringing everyone together.
Yeah, and of course, yesterday, Obama went to Wall Street to lecture them and impose more regulation on them. But apparently, the only thing the media could talk about was where Obama and Clinton ate after the speech. They went to an Italian eatery, and they quote, "A cheery Clinton raved about the food when asked how the lunch went." So that's the focus
terrific,
of the U.S.
great.
Media.
That's great. I'm sure that they enjoyed the scungili. Well, there's some interesting articles on michaelsavage.com as well. "Bush didn't understand the conservative movement" by Byron York. No kidding. I mean, we needed an article on that. No kidding. And male fish in many U.S. rivers have been feminized. The FDA has approved emergency rules for mass medication of the population. Did you hear this? If they declare a health emergency, they can forcibly inject people. How do you like that?
And apparently the ACLU now in many states across the country is backing laws that would require schools to inform parents and students that they have the option to opt out of saying the Pledge of Allegiance.
I've been calling for their investigation and defunding, but no one listens to me. The 50 richest members of Congress, 95% of them are liberal Democrats. They all claim to be doing well, but they're doing good indeed. Or shall we say, they all claim to be doing good, but they're doing very well indeed.
And Admiral Mullen, at a hearing today in Washington, D.C., has said that more forces are going to be needed for the Afghan war. Apparently, we're going down the same road that Johnson did in the ramp-up of Vietnam, but the left is a little to be heard.
By the way, going back to the black school gang beating the white boy with glasses and the crowd cheering wildly, in St. Louis, the police say the school bus beating may not be racially motivated.
Interesting. Very
yeah, they
interesting.
Just may not be racially motivated. Savage. Heard me ask the question, why are we in Afghanistan? Since we have troops there, the other question is, what will it take to be successful there? Well, we have Jim Phillips, Senior Research Fellow for Middle Eastern Affairs at the Heritage Foundation, to give us his views on what it will take for success in Afghanistan.
President Obama recently received the report from General Stanley McChrystal, who was the U.S. commander in Afghanistan. And he must now decide how to proceed in Afghanistan, which is a crucial theater in the war against al-Qaeda. McChrystal's assessment of the war also is fine-tuning of a new strategy based on counterinsurgency doctrine rather than on a narrow counterterrorism approach, which the U.S. has taken in the past. And the Bush administration was moving in this direction as it left office. But there's a danger that the administration's new Afghanistan strategy will be defeated in Washington before it's fully tried in Afghanistan, because many Democrats see Afghanistan only as the good war as long as President Bush was in the White House and it served as a useful means of political attack on Bush's Iraq policy. Many of them are getting ready to bail out of Afghanistan, which would be disastrous for the U.S., and Senator Russell Feingold has introduced a bill to mandate a gradual troop drawdown of our troops, and presently there's about 68,000 troops in Afghanistan, and pulling those troops out would be essentially conceding defeat and sugarcoating it, blaming it on the Afghans. In truth, the war has been getting more vicious in recent months. The violence has escalated in part because the Taliban, which the U.S. pushed out of ruling Afghanistan in 2001, has returned with a vengeance and tried to block Afghanistan's presidential elections in August. Also, it's important to note that until this year, the U.S. had very few troops in Afghanistan, roughly 30,000 or less. The war was waged on the cheap. It was under-resourced. And as Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mike Mullen, said in 2008 at the Heritage Foundation, "In Iraq, we do what we must. In Afghanistan, we do what we can." There's also been a greater use of IEDs in Afghanistan. The Taliban is learning from Al-Qaeda. But it's important to remember that this war is winnable. It will be protracted, expensive, and grueling. But the good news is the Taliban is extremely unpopular. Polls indicate that less than 15% of Afghans support the Taliban, and mostly these are Pashtuns in the south and eastern part of the country. The Taliban is more popular in Pakistan across the border than it is in Afghanistan, and that makes sense because the Taliban originally came out of madrasas or Islamic seminaries in the tribal badlands along the Pakistani-Afghan border. But Pakistan recently has made progress in reversing the advances made by the Pakistani Taliban, and that's good news. Winning in Afghanistan requires firm and patient presidential leadership. President Obama must give his military commanders the best chance for success. If he takes an incremental approach and defers any of their requests for troop reinforcements, that could jeopardize the whole strategy. An alternative policy suggested by some critics and even by some officials within the Obama administration already has been tried and failed miserably, not only in Afghanistan, but in Iraq as well. And that's called the small footprint strategy, which would reduce the number of U.S. troops and scale back the goals of the war to focus solely on Al-Qaeda rather than on the Taliban. That's not a realistic option because such an abdication would allow the Taliban to carve out sanctuaries and eventually topple the Afghan government. The war cannot be effectively waged merely with air power, Predator drones, and special forces. In fact, that's already been tried. In Afghanistan in the late 1990s, the Clinton administration hurled cruise missiles at Al-Qaeda training camps in Afghanistan, but this chuck-and-duck strategy failed to blunt the Al-Qaeda threat before 9/11. The Bush administration adopted a minimalist strategy in Afghanistan in 2001, and that helped contribute to Osama bin Laden's escape from his mountain fortress at Tora Bora. Afterwards, Washington focused narrowly on counterterrorism goals in Afghanistan rather than counterinsurgency operations in order to free up military assets for the war in Iraq. That allowed the Taliban to recruit across the border in Pakistan and made a violent resurgence. The small footprint strategy also failed in Iraq before it was abandoned in favor of General Petraeus's counterinsurgency strategy, backed by the surge of American troops in early 2007. Despite this record of failure, some stubbornly continue to support an offshore strategy for landlocked Afghanistan today. But half measures, the hallmark of the small footprint strategy, will not work. Precise intelligence is needed to use smart bombs smartly, but few Afghans would be willing to risk their lives to provide such intelligence unless they are assured of protection from the Taliban's ruthless retaliation. This requires more American boots on the ground, beyond the 68,000 that will be deployed there by the end of the year. Another critical element is getting more Afghan boots on the ground. The Afghan army and police have been poorly equipped and undermanned for years. Today, there's a total of only 173,000 men in the Afghan army and police, compared to over 600,000 in Iraq, which is a smaller and less populated country. The new strategy will put a much higher priority on building up the Afghan army and police, giving them better training, embedding advisors, and partnering Afghan units with nearby American units. This is something that succeeded in Iraq and could show benefits in Afghanistan.
What sort of numbers of U.S. troops are we talking about, and then down the line, Afghan forces?
The administration has committed to 68,000 U.S. forces by the end of the year, and it's believed that after his report, General McChrystal will follow up with requests for several thousand more. It's not known exactly how many. But I think one of the biggest mistakes we've made in Afghanistan is not going full bore to train the Afghan army and police from the very beginning. And this is one of the things that General Petraeus corrected in Iraq even before he was the top commander. He was in charge of the training of the Iraqi army. And as they've stood up, the U.S. forces have stood down and are gradually being withdrawn.
What effect do you think the Afghan election process might have on support for the Afghan mission?
The Afghan presidential elections in August have been marred by widespread reports of voting fraud, and those need to be investigated and corrected, or else they will have a very negative impact on support for the war in Afghanistan. But it's important to note that I think the U.S. goal in Afghanistan should not be creating some kind of Western-style democracy, but recreating what was in Afghanistan before the communist coup in 1978 set off a period of instability and civil war that allowed the Taliban eventually to come to power. And so I think we should be working with Afghanistan's traditional leaders, the tribal leaders and the elites in the cities that are very adamantly opposed to the Taliban.
Thank you, Jim Phillips, Senior Research Fellow for Middle Eastern Affairs at the Heritage Foundation.
Thank you for having me on.
I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
A while back, I quoted from an article by Ellis Washington about the dangers of regulatory czar Cass Sunstein. Now, I don't want to let that go. I want you all to know just who this person is and what he believes. So joining us now to talk about this is Ellis Washington.
Michael, thanks a lot for having me on your show again.
Ellis, give us a background here. Who is Sunstein? Why is he important?
Cass Sunstein is, to those of us that are in the academy, he's a very well-known figure. He, his last position was at a professor, at a visiting professor at Harvard Law School. But prior to that, he had been at the University of Chicago Law School, I think, for about 20 years or so, where he is a very prolific. He's written many books, I think between 25 and 30 books, in addition to a lot of law review articles. His main areas of expertise are constitutional law, administrative law, and he touches on international law. He's gotten the most recent recognition for a book that he wrote a couple of years ago on animal rights. And one of his theses in this book is that animals should be allowed to sue their owners.
Animal rights book? Sue their owners? Are you kidding?
Well, you know, for those of us in the academy, most of the professors, there are avowed liberals, many others are socialists, Marxists, neo-Marxists. You have a whole cadre of, radicals. This is a hotbed of radicalism, unfortunately. And a few of us that are there that are, either conservative or at least like Cass Sunstein, he can come in there, and he's considered like the liberal doyen, and he's treated with a lot of deference, and he says a lot of very radical things in his books that a lot of the public aren't aware of, like the quote I mentioned to you about animals being able to sue their owners. I mean, that is just ridiculous. But in his world, which is based on several very radical and failed ideologies like moral relativism, which ascribes an equality that everything is equal and no one thing is any better than anything else. Once you go down that road, Michael, I mean, you're just opening up Pandora's box as far as moral rectitude and constitutional rights that are, you know, that we're founded by our creator and with certain inalienable rights, things like that, that the founders took for granted and that are enshrined in our Constitution. People like Cass Sunstein throws those things right out the window because he has a positive law worldview as opposed to a natural law worldview.
What does he mean by a second Bill of Rights?
Yes, Michael, this is one of the many very controversial but relatively unknown things that Cass Sunstein is presenting, the second Bill of Rights, which is even more totalizing and all-consuming than the original Bill of Rights, second Bill of Rights proposed 75 years ago by Franklin Delano Roosevelt, in which a lot of those components were enshrined in his New Deal. Cass Sunstein wants to revive FDR's New Deal, so to speak, and we've heard Obama being, he's also, incidentally, he was a mentor of Sunstein at the University of Chicago, where they both taught for years. And so he's in, Obama has embraced Sunstein's kind of FDR New Deal Part 2 philosophy, and we see Obama enshrining many of FDR's policies and even going further than what FDR did, like taking over GM and Chrysler and Wall Street. So Sunstein, when he talks about this second Bill of Rights, he's really talking about the second coming of FDR's New Deal. He wants to have people, he's creating a whole new cadre of new rights like a right to an education, a right to a home, a right to health care, and a right to protection against monopolies. And this is just the beginning, Michael.
This is also a person who said we should celebrate taxes and to celebrate Tax Day?
Indeed, Michael. If you can imagine, I mean, just let me take the Savage Nation back a couple of hundred years to the founding of this nation. When prior to the American Revolution, there were a number of onerous taxes that the King of England, King George III, had imposed upon the colonies, and America being the 13 colonies were under the jurisdiction of the British Empire. When you look back at exactly what kind of tax it was, like the stamp, what they call them acts, but they were really taxes, the Stamp Act, the Sugar Act, and things like that, those were really taxes. And I did some research on that and found, I believe it was the Stamp Act, it was really, or the Tea Act, it was really just like one-third of one penny as far as that was the value of the actual tax. And the people in those days, our founding fathers, went ballistic over one-third of 1 cent in higher taxes. And now, of course, in the age of Obama, Michael, we're talking about trillions of dollars as if we're talking about pennies. But what motivated the founding fathers to revolt against the superpower of the 18th century, the British Empire, was only one-third of 1 cent in higher in taxes.
You say he's being groomed for the Supreme Court. How do you know that?
Michael, as ridiculous as that is, it is true. I heard the other day, I believe it was last week on Fox News, one of the commentators had their legal analyst, Judge Andrew Napolitano, on, and they were talking about Cass Sunstein. And one of the things the commentator asked the judge was, well, you know, if this rumor is true, where would you put Sunstein as far as in comparison to other judges on the Supreme Court. And without batting an eye, Judge Napolitano looked directly into the camera and said, I will put Cass Sunstein to the left of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, which, as anybody knows, is the most liberal, reactionary, former ACLU general counsel, and a very radical judge. And so for Sunstein to be, in Judge Napolitano's view, to be to the left of Ruth Bader Ginsburg is ridiculous. And it's an outrage that Obama would even consider a man like that for the Supreme Court, let alone recently making him the regulatory czar.
Well, we're talking about being regulated into oblivion.
Indeed, Michael. As part of the name of my article was that Sunstein was going to be regulating us to death. And when you look at his work at Harvard, teaching regulatory law and the totalizing, comprehensive way that he wants to just have government affect each and every aspect of our life. I mean, I had mentioned, like the farmers, a lot of his policies are going to literally put thousands of farmers out of business because of new increased environmental, water, and land rights. If there's some little bug or some obscure little animal that nobody even knows about or some little creek in the back of your farm, under Sunstein as the regulatory czar, he will have the power to literally regulate America's farmers into oblivion. I just wrote that article about Cass Sunstein. It was based on something that you had mentioned a few days before, and then when you had mentioned him again last Friday, I had finished the piece. And like you've done so many times in the past, you've been such an inspiration to me. I can't listen to your program without having a legal pad right by my side in the ink pen so I can try to capture some of these great gifts that you are giving to the Savage Nation and write them down.
Excellent information, Ellis. Thanks again for being on the Savage Nation.
I want to thank you, Michael, for just giving me the opportunity to not only inspire me to write articles about things that are not talked about in the Stalinist-controlled media, but also to give me a forum on the Savage Nation to present my articles that I've written. You're great, Michael, and I love you, brother. God bless you.
Savage.
Talked to you this week about Pat Buchanan going to England for a debate and not once mentioning their ban on Michael Savage. And then I revealed to you what Pat Buchanan was debating in England. He was arguing that Winston Churchill was more a liability than an asset, and in the process defending Nazi Germany. I want you to listen to Pat Buchanan, right-wing nut, again.
Churchill lusted for war and pushed his country to turn two European wars into world wars, so Germany might be destroyed. And both times, Churchill succeeded.
He says Churchill was the one lusting for war? Wait, Buchanan goes off the boards. It gets worse.
History records that those wars that together took the lives of perhaps 100 million Europeans were the mortal blows that advanced the death of the West. And it was Winston Churchill who led the West in its advance to barbarism.
Barbarism? To this vicious racist, Churchill, not Hitler, was the barbarian? And guess what? The Blitz was Churchill's fault, too.
Coventry and the Blitz were Nazi war crimes, but they were also reprisal raids for terror bombing begun by Churchill. The climax came in 1945 with Thunderclap, the firebombing of Dresden, the Florence of the Elbs, a defenseless city of a defeated nation packed with refugees fleeing the serial rapists of the Red Army. Estimates of the Dresden dead range from 35,000 to 250,000.
And don't forget Poland. According to Buchanan, they should have just given in.
In 1939, Mr. Churchill pushed his country to go to war for Poland. Britain did. And was Poland saved? Instead of losing Danzig, the Poles lost half their country, 6 million dead, and 50 years of freedom.
This is what Buchanan has stooped to? It's beyond belief. Pat Buchanan has not been on the show for 2 years. He will never, ever be on this show again. Okay, moving on. You got to remember, I went to college in what year? I'm trying to remember. I don't know. 59, I entered college. And I graduated in 63. Is that right? I don't remember. I swear it's like a blank to me. Well, I'm trying to do the math. So when I started to read The New Yorker in the 60s, they were doing portraits, Bob Dylan, 1964, Fellini, 1965. And, you know, on and on through the years, Scorsese, 2000, Woody Allen, 94. I don't like Woody Allen, but he's a pretty good filmmaker. I think he's the Stepanfetchit of the Jewish filmmakers. But it's irrelevant. The important thing is that profiles done by The New Yorker are a big deal. They're a big deal to me. And so, therefore, if it's a big deal to me, you'll have to indulge me right now in the sense that I think the writer actually caught, I'm sorry to use a phrase that's overused, the gestalt of my show. He got it. He got the essence of who I am and what the show is all about. And I gambled that he would. I mean, he was a jazz writer for years for the New York Times. And since he knows I love jazz, that's how we started the correspondence. And I figured anyone who is into music can write about musicians. Remember, he's writing about a musician. It's very hard to do because you're only hearing the music. And he's trying to get inside the musician's soul. If he could do that, I figured he can get into this radio guy's soul because I'm not like other radio hosts. Some of them are good. Some of them are terrible. Some are phonies. Some are not. I can't speak for the other man. I can only speak for me. And I am telling you that the age of the didactic radio show is over. I am telling you as I stand here, the day of I'm a conservative and here's what it is, or I'm a liberal and I wear a tie now, is over. No one wants to hear it anymore. Everyone's heard everything you could ever say in that format. It's over. It's dead. It's only a matter of time until that's over. Dead. Dodo bird. Think dodo bird. The only thing that will survive in talk radio is me. Or shows like mine about self. In other words, a journal of a daily life tied into politics. But if you think you're going to get away with every day like Hannity playing OU kid conservative, you're mistaken. That is the past. That's the past. It's mid-90s. At least to me it is. It's always been in the past tense. I was never interested in that monodimensional kind of stuff to begin with. So this guy caught the whole thing, I believe. And the texture of it is such that it would serve as a shooting script for a movie about me. Finally, someone's done it. And I'm going to read a few pieces from the article itself. I'll start right here. And it says, on his radio show that afternoon, Savage had played tracks by Cannonball Adderley and John Coltrane, and he sought to draw a line connecting the music he loved as a boy, the herbal medicine he practiced as a young man, and the political philosophy he advocates now. In each case, he said he was after a kind of freedom. And he said it was the big government liberals who had abandoned freedom and, in a broader sense, abandoned him. But successful rabble-rousing requires a certain kind of optimism, a belief that, sooner or later, your compatriots will come to their senses. And part of what makes his radio show so engrossing is its undercurrent of pessimism. Savage never quite seems able to convince himself that the forces of righteousness will prevail. Indeed, he often gives voice to a sneaking suspicion that it doesn't much matter. Sitting on his deck, he cheerfully admitted as much. Quote, I watch shows where they're digging up a mummy from 4,000 years ago, bothering a tomb, he said. That person shaved, brushed his teeth with a stick, took a you-know-what, had sex, whatever. And now what? Who knows what his politics were? Across the bay was the Chevron Richmond refinery, half hidden between the hills and the coast. If a terrorist blew it up, it'd be the equivalent of 10 nuclear bombs, he said. I sometimes sit there and think about the fireball. And he goes on. And he makes some statements that are not true. For example, because of his antipathy for liberals and his incendiary style, Savage is sometimes seen as an heir to iconic radio provocateurs of an early era like Father Coughlin, who emerged during the Great Depression as an outspoken critic of both capitalist excess and the communist menace. He later became a more marginal figure railing against Jewish bankers. That's not me, that's Father Coughlin. Although I don't particularly like bankers to begin with. Whether they're Gentiles or Jews doesn't matter to me. All you got to do is look at Goldman Sachs. I really don't know what church or synagogue they go to. To me, they should all be in jail. that I just added. It's not in the article. And Bob Grant, he says, whose caustic broadcast made him a star in the 1970s. But when Savage talks about his chief influences, he is most likely to mention the old time something. I never listened to Gene Shepherd. Everyone compares me to him. I don't remember listening to him. I'm not trying to knock the guy. I mean, I know he's good. I never listened to him. I never listened to talk radio as a kid. My father had found out listening to talk radio, but he died in 1970. I didn't know he listened. He must have listened to Bob at that time. I don't know who he listened to. I didn't listen to talk radio. I thought it was a bunch of old idiots. You're yakking away. What did I want to listen to? Some old guy grousing about in the studio. Sounded like he was on too much gin or something. What would a young guy listen to talk radio for in my day? I didn't listen to talk radio. I listened to Symphony Sid because he was a jazz DJ. And when I come home from the Palladium, I hear this great voice belting out at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm coming over the Queensboro Bridge, and the Silver Cup sign is blowing smoke in the air, and everyone's got sort of high in the car, and this guy's got the greatest voice in history, a combination of a jazz voice, a combination of booze, a combination of cigarettes, a combination of worldliness. I like the voice. Am I copying him? No. But that's the kind of voice I liked. And I love Mel Allen. Play Mel Allen so they know why I love Mel Allen. It's a high fly ball.
Deep right field. That ball is going. It is gone.
There. I get chills. See, I got chills up the back of my neck when I hear that. Why? I don't know why. Is it the time of America, the innocence? Was America ever innocent? Is that possible? You think there was an innocent time in any world? In any nation's history? When was America innocent? When? When was it innocent? How can a nation be innocent? Every nation is forged in blood and conquest and stealing land from somebody else. I mean, what do I want to wake you up like a baby from a slumber? Name a nation that wasn't forged in blood and guts and stealing land from the previous inhabitants. Can you name one nation? Please. Tell me the nation. San Francisco, stolen from the Miwoks. Filled with criminals of the lowest order right now. Don't get me. I didn't want to do politics. Look at Nancy Pelosi, those eyes. Look what Botox does to a woman. My grandmother's age, they just let the eyes droop. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.